are mine. The blood of this city pulses as insistently as it did 50 years ago. Hot with life, hard with hope, and as appealing as stale bread, it calls to me in a language I remember but no longer speak. I sniff the air and find it wanting. In the weeks since waking, there hasn't been even a slight hint of sweetness anywhere in what used to be the Kingdom of Naples. Just the sour stink of vinegar and the sharp pinch of gasoline. She approaches me on a street in the Spanish Quarter as I appreciate the things that have not changed. The cobblestones separated by centuries worth of sticky black muck. The cracks in the plaster. The shrines of the Madonna whose red robes are painted over in sky blue. Under it all, she is our goddess. Forgotten, but no less powerful.
You like it?
The woman asks, standing next to me to admire the glass shrine embedded in the wall. Her eyes glint in the neon light of a restaurant. Her cropped hair smells of a melted plastic product, and her breath has a faint hint of cigarette tar. Yes, I tell her, looking for a companion who'd miss her. Sometimes I do. Folding glamour around her like a closing umbrella, I pull her into my liminal space, where dimensions fold and perception creates time, traveling 2 kilometers in a split second. Up in the mountains, where my villa looks over the city, the glamour starts to wear off. But it's too late for her, and just in time for me. On the patio couch, her skin breaks under my teeth. Tendons crunch and yield. Her carotid artery opens. She screams and writhes, but I push her against the back of the couch and hold her until my venom seeps back into her bloodstream. Then she wraps her legs around me. Her twisting goes from push to pull, from no to yes. Drinking used to give me life, but I feel nothing, not just unsatiated, but frustrated. I dig my fingers in her flesh and hold her head steady to get more, but more of nothing is still nothing. She thrusts her hips against mine. I've taken enough to put her in a deep thrall. She will obey me without thinking. Pleasing me will become her entire purpose. Unlike glamour, which happens in a moment and wears off quickly, thrall has deep roots that hook a heart and a mind for days or weeks until I take more of her tasteless, powerless blood to renew the cycle.
Dad!
Laro's voice interrupts. I unlock from her, and she moans in disappointment. What?
Fidele Skanga and his son.
Laro doesn't hide his irritation well. On the face of a 500-year-old vampire who looks all of 14 years, he seems like the petulant adolescent he will always be. Forever stunted, with a mind as plastic and incomplete as a boy's. He holds up his glass slab, a phone. It displays the time in a row of numbers even a human could see in the dark. The Skangas, the heads of the family of the Papal States territory, are on time, and I took too long drinking from this nameless, flavorless, groaning woman. Hush, I tell her, wiping my mouth and chin with a handkerchief. She goes immediately silent. I turn back to Laro. Bring them.
Here?
He indicates the thralled woman clutching my jacket. Her throat has stopped bleeding, but the wound won't close for another few hours. Here, now, and shut those lights. After a pause, he goes, flipping off the light Lucille asked me to turn on. In the moonlight, the woman's doe eyes look at me with pleading desire. I intended to drink her dry, but I'll have to leave her trapped on the head of a pin. What's your name? I ask her.
Lucille, do you like it?
She clutches at my chest.
I'll change it if you don't.
I know you would. I pull her hand out of my shirt and press my finger against her pulse. It's faint. She must be weak and dizzy already, but all she wants to do is fuck. Did your grandmother ever read your poem?
No, but I can ask her to.
Did she do any kind of magic? Read the cards? Did she wear a chimaruta? Did she dance under a walnut tree?
She prays the rosary every day. Is that a kind of magic?
It is, but not the kind I need, Hope asked before common sense intervened. If this woman was a Strega witch, I would have smelled her sweetness immediately. Her blood would already vibrate inside me, awakening the power I've lost. It would not have restored me completely, but I would be stronger and faster already. If she was a Strega, I'd keep her alive long enough to feed me power until her heart gave out, and by some other means, mine was repaired. Lauro enters with two men behind him. I knew Fedele Scanga when he was too young to show any meaningful loyalty to his capo. I expect little now that I've been nearly forgotten just half a damn century later. The younger one has a goatee thicker than the sole of a shoe. Domenico Scanga, the cunning, broke-nosed scion of the family. If he met his mortality when he got that long scar on his forehead, he learned nothing from it. Gentlemen, I indicate the sofa on the other side of the table. They sit, unadjusted to the dark. Domenico squints at the woman reaching around my waist. I understand you have a problem.
Capo.
Fedele dabs his forehead with a folded handkerchief, already perspiring himself dry. Even the bushes of hair tufting inside his ears are wet.
What the fuck is this?
Domenico slaps a folded page onto the table. My red wax seal has been broken, and the two edges tent in the breeze. The note inside is handwritten by me. It says the same things all the others say. His sister is of age. She must present herself to me at armistice night so that I can determine whether or not to make her my bride. There's no way to mistake my summons. It's quite clear. I pull Lucille's hand away and turn to her. Basta, now. She scuttles to the end of the couch, facing me with her knees against her chin.
With all respect.
Fedele's voice has the hint of a whine. All of your respect, I say. Save some for your mother.
It's been 50 years.
Domenico puts on his negotiating voice. He's the reasonable one now, a man of business, but the scar on his forehead pulses with bottled rage.
The Carmine, Montefiore, they all talk about when they talk about the greatest who ever lived. That can't be you. That guy's ancient history.
He's completely unafraid. I respect that. A man without fear is useful.
50 years?
Lauro says from the doorway.
Hardly ancient. Barely even history.
Domenico points at me, which I hate from a worthless human who's been dying less time than I've been sleeping.
You're a son, grandson, nephew, whatever. Nepotism is a thing, but you can't just show up and start claiming women. That's not a thing.
Fedele, I ask his father, did you explain the system to your children? That their prosperity and privilege comes at a cost.
It's different now, Signor Montefiore.
Different? Blood doesn't flow in their veins? They don't piss out their dicks anymore? To my left, Lucille exhales hotly. Domenico's attention goes to her. I feel her foot push against my thigh.
They have so many stories on their phones,
Fidele says.
They don't believe anything.
Now he's turned to the woman I brought home. Her hand is down the front of her jeans. When I turn back to Fidele, he gives me his full attention, casting his eyes down submissively.
With all respect.
Skanga respect is a rapidly depreciating currency.
More.
Lucile groans, the denim mound of her hand moving quickly.
More, capo, per favore.
Domenico bolts up, still jabbing that fucking finger, giving me a nice view of the straight scar inside his elbow.
I don't even know who you are. We're not putting my sister or any of our women up for marriage when you have no territory to offer.
First of all, I fix my cuffs, immune to both his demands and Lucille's pleading moans. You have territory because I allow it. Domenico scoffs, ready to deny a truth just because he wasn't aware of it. Second, I speak before he can interrupt. You will be still. I throw a blanket of glamour over the boy, and his muscles go slack.
Please, capo.
Lucile cries.
More.
Fidele wants to look at her, but his eyes are locked in the middle distance, and his lips are clamped shut. Leaning over, I take Domenico's arm and place it on the table, palm up. He does not know how to resist the half-dream state he's in. You have no respect. You're wearing short sleeves like you're at the beach. What's this scar inside your elbow?
A man scarred inside the elbow has been cut by his capo,
Laro says from the doorway.
When his blood is sucked from that cut, he is a made man.
You're made, Domenico? I slap his cheek in the way of a tough uncle, too hard for affection, but too lightly to be a blow. Someone cut you, but who took the blood? I turn to his father. Who made him, Fidele?
I did it. I took no blood. I meant no disrespect.
The laugh I allow from my throat is barely audible. As a child, Fidele was probably warned about the Montefiores because we could come back any time. But then decades passed. His son wasn't warned. He was told fairy tales and scary stories.
Oh, God!
Lucile bucks and arcs at the end of the couch. That's enough of that. I snap at her, and she goes bug-eyed, cowed, hand still. You may finish quietly. She smiles and jerks her hand between her legs again. I turn back to the Skangas. That scar let everyone know that I owned you. If I told you to suck your own dick, you'd break your back to reach. I yank his hand toward me until he's almost out of his seat. All I had to do was offer you a drop of my blood to set you free. But I've never set anyone free, Domenico. There's no point.
Let me go.
Domenico's defiance has lost its edge, but there's a man inside him screaming to resist.
We will comply with our capo's wish. On Armistice night, there will be a bride line. You will have your choice of any woman you want. We will honor our obligations.
You will. I nod to Laro. He unsheaths his knife and stands over Domenico. Such a neat little line, I say of the scar. I can barely see it. Did it even bleed?
What do you want?
Domenico whispers as Lucile brings herself to orgasm. I want what's mine. Laro makes the cut. Then I drink from it, removing Domenico Scanga's pathetic worry about the territory I let his family have. Lucille's soul is commended to Vesuvia before sunrise. She dies, feeding a hunger she cannot satisfy. The next day, with the handful of men we have made, Laro and I go to the center of what used to be the Kingdom of Naples.
It looks untouched.
I linger in front of a grocer. Five people crowd the store. The tomatoes are red, the grapes are fat. The escarole is waning for the time of year. A woman pulling a toddler walks out with a bag, looking at me with a mix of lust and disgust I am sure she doesn't understand. Laro looks up from his phone and shakes his head.
There are cameras everywhere. When we lost Bufilo, the way we lost him.
24 years ago, a gang of men found one of the Montefiore colony while he slept. One of their women was in thrall to him. The filthy mortals tore him to shreds. A crime I would have avenged ferociously, but now can do nothing about.
That was just when everyone started having their own camera, but before you could spread video on social media. Now, well, you know.
You did the right thing. I put my hand on his back. He's still sad about it, and though the news is still fresh to me, I feel nothing. Bufilo always drew their thrall too deep.
You wouldn't have let us all sink like this. But now we can control it.
This isn't the first time he's described the last 20 years that the Kindred have been underground, powerless and frightened. It's going to be fixed. I assure him of an outcome before I've formulated the process. We walk away, past the murals and banners of some soccer player named Maradona. There used to be posters of my face everywhere, because I kept order. Now we are debauched, weak, disorganized. The system is run by petty tyrants who pay the authorities to look the other way, keeping them rich instead of keeping them scared. We turn a corner and I smell it. Spinning over 1,000 years of humanity curls the thread of a scent. Hundreds of years ago, I lost the ability to taste sweetness, except in one case, the blood of Estrega. I follow the thickening yarn of honey and cane, flowers and fruit, to a little cobblestone street. Even before I see her, I know I have found what may be the last of her kind.